Mr. Korth, are you with us here today? Morning to you, and you may approach, but please do not start just yet. Mrs. Melson, are you here today? Very good. Do either council have any questions before we begin? Very good. Mr. Korth, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Jim Korth. I represent the appellant Tim Moore in this case. Between 2014 and 2016, Mr. Moore was the chairman of the Board of Trustees of the Village of Madryn. For those of you who are familiar with the Village of Madryn, it's a very small village in western Nebraska, a population of 197 people. Mr. Moore resided in the community and was a longtime board member. He had been a board member for approximately 20 years at the time all of this happened. At issue in this case is compensation that Mr. Moore received from the Village of Madryn during those years of 2014, 2015, and 2016. The village had a resolution that provided that he was to be paid $300 for every meeting he attended, and also be reimbursed for his expenses, including, for example, mileage. The compensation we're talking about is compensation that went beyond the meetings that he attended and reimbursement for mileage. So he performed a number of tasks at the direction of the board of directors, including preparing annual and street budgets, the annual audit that was done by the village accountant, nuisance abatement. They had him mow the village park, man the dump, things like that. It was a variety of different tasks that were occasioned by the season of the year or emergencies that arose. He covered for the village superintendent when he had a heart attack and was recovering from a heart attack.
Mr. Moore testified that all of this additional work, you know, however characterized, was sort of pre-approved by the board, and there was no testimony to the contrary. Is that right?
I believe that's right, Your Honor.
Didn't he also testify that the amount to be paid, the hourly rate, that either $20 or $25 an hour, was also pre-approved?
The rate that he was paid at was certainly pre-approved, Your Honor. Yes.
So if there was pre-approval of the work to be done and pre-approval of the rate at which that work would be compensated for Mr. Moore, how was there not an agreement?
Our contention, Your Honor, is that it wasn't a contract. We believe that Mr. Moore believed that he was an employee of the village. The village believed that he was an employee of the village. I understand that ultimately the commissioner hearing officer found that that he wasn't an employee. I understand that by statute, you can't both be a board member and an employee.
But how does the issue of whether he was an employee or an independent contractor inform our determination under the statute of whether he had an interest in a contract that needed to be disclosed?
Our contention is that there was no meeting of the there was no contract. An employment situation, employment arrangement, looks a lot like a contract if it's at will. Someone comes to work for you as an at-will employee and you're going to tell them what tasks to perform. And so there's an understanding I'm supposed to perform these tasks. There's a con rate of pay, whatever that might be. And there's a submission of a time card or a timesheet or something in order to get compensated. And that's what was done here. There was an understanding about the task to be performed. There was a rate of pay agreed upon, and there was a voucher submitted at the meetings.
If after Mr. Moore had done the work, could the city have refused to pay and had no enforceable obligation to pay?
I believe that's true, Your Honor. There's one of the cases from, I think it was Sturba, from the predecessor statute before the NADC was enacted, where they basically say it's either legally allowed compensation or it's gratuitous. But I think that they could have taken the position that he wasn't entitled to be paid for it, but they didn't.
You talk about pre-approval of the rate of pay and apparently pre-approval of Mr. Moore doing the work. Are those approvals in our record?
I believe it was in the form of Mr. Moore's testimony. I think he talked about the fact that they had agreed to compensate him at the rate of $20 an hour, I believe, for a period of time, and then that number changed. I apologize, I don't remember the exact year.
There's nothing in the record that on the village board meeting of July 3rd, 2014, they approved $20 an hour or anything like that.
I don't recall if it was in any of the minutes that were part of the documentary evidence at the hearing. I just remember Mr. Moore testifying to that, and it was something that the hearing officer acknowledged as part of the factual record.
There were no payroll taxes withheld. He was paid a lump sum. There was a 1099 issued every year. Is that correct?
That is correct, John.
Does that have any bearing on this issue?
We had one of our witnesses who testified as an expert witness was Terry Galloway, who's a CPA who did the accounting work for the village, and he testified about, because we knew about the 1099, and he testified about the issuance of the 1099. His conclusion was that really, notwithstanding what people think, that does not mean you're an independent contractor, you have a contract. At least as far as the IRS is concerned, they're concerned about the whether you're an employee or an independent contractor. They're not concerned about what documents are issued to you or what's withheld from your paycheck. They just want to make sure you're paying your taxes. So that was his testimony. That was his opinion. So he did address the 1099, Your Honor.
Who decided the scope of the work?
I'm sorry?
Who decided the scope of the work? When he did the work, when he didn't do the work, when somebody else did the work, who made those determinations?
My recollection from his testimony is that he took the board directed him to do it.
There's nothing in the minutes that says the month of July you will do X, Y, and Z.
I do not believe there's anything in the record to that effect. My understanding, again, from the testimony at the hearing was that they had certain things that were seasonal in nature. So they did, you know, there was snow removal that was every winter. They did the budgets at the same time every year. And so he was directed to be a part of that and work with, for example, with Mr. Galloway. And so I'm not sure it was ever in the minutes, but it was, I think there was, everyone was on the same page that when that time rolled around.
Just a general understanding that he would be responsible for those duties.
Yes, on behalf of the village, correct.
Is it fair for this court to assume that Mr. Moore would not have put in a voucher to be paid for the work if he didn't think he was entitled to be paid for the work?
I think it's fair for the court to assume that if Mr. Moore was going, if he was going to submit a voucher and not get paid on that voucher, he wouldn't have performed the work.
So on what basis was he entitled to be paid?
It's a little bit of a nuanced point, Your Honor, but I actually believe that that the compensation for that went beyond these meetings is arguably was not arguably lawful compensation. That would have fallen under counts 1 and 2. He was charged with 11 counts. Counts 1 and 2 were essentially no public officer can obtain financial gain other than as is provided for it by law. Hearing officer found that he did not violate counts 1 and 2. That was affirmed by the district court, and that was not cross appealed by the NADC here. I think that there's an argument that could possibly be made that there was a violation of counts 1 and 2. That's not before the court. I'm my argument is to counts 3 and 11, which are all contingent upon.
I'm just trying to understand. I understand you to be saying there was an agreement, but not a contract. So I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. But if an agreement is not a contract, I'm trying to understand on what basis did he submit those vouchers in 2014, 2015, 2016, if there was no agreement.
He believed he was doing it as an employee of the village. That was the belief he had. I think it was the belief the village had.
An employee can't have a contract. The employer, right?
An employee can't have a contract with the employer, correct?
What are we to make of the fact that apparently these payments were never on the board's agenda, and they appear to be a bit secretive?
But Your Honor, I believe that's sort of the crux of the case. This, the statute, if there are contracts, the statute requires that they be made an agenda item, that he make a declaration at the meeting as to his interest, whatever that might be, and that he not vote. And he concedes that that during 2014, 15, and 16, that never happened. I wouldn't say that it was secretive. This is a very small community. I think there was a sort of general understanding about what was going on. That's not, it's just me saying that's not in the record. Of what was going on, and again, I think Mr. Moore and the village believed that, you know, he was an employee and he was doing things in the best interest of the village, and no one had a problem with him being paid for it.
I see. Is it a fair assumption in a situation like this, in small communities, not well, any community, but the maybe no one thought about whether he was an employee or this was a contract until this issue came up?
I think that's a very fair point you're making, Your Honor. I think that is absolutely accurate. I can't speak for other small communities other than the village of Madrid, but it would seem to me that in this case that no one really ever explored that issue prior to this all coming up, and
it appeared that there was things that needed to get done, and they were just kind of a general agreement to go get them done.
But yeah, I mentioned mowing the city village park. There wasn't somebody to mow it. Mr. Moore went and mowed it. I mean, there were tasks that needed to be done, and they told him to go do it. He did it. So that happened a lot.
Regardless of how this court looks at it, there's probably no nefarious activities going on here, maybe just some general rules that are there to avoid corruption may have been crossed.
Yeah, I will agree with the fact that there was nothing nefarious done here, and I think that that's what I think that's what Judge Carson pointed out. He said that he had no doubt that Mr. Moore was doing things in the best interest of the village, what he thought was in the best interest of the village, and wasn't acting again in any nefarious way. So
it wasn't a question of not doing the work and billing for it. He evidently did the work. It's just whether to comply with the rules.
Yeah, I think that's the contention of the appellee, is that and the ultimate conclusion of the NADC and the district court was that he clearly did the work. He clearly got compensated for it. Their contention is that it was a contractual arrangement. He didn't do X, Y, and Z. And when you don't do X, Y, and Z, you violate apparently 3 different statutes at the same time. So
if it wasn't a contract, what was it? It wouldn't be a gift, because cities, villages can't make gifts to their officers. So what was it?
Our contention is that it was a misunderstanding by Mr. Moore and the village. That everyone thought that it was an employee-employer relationship.
Isn't that a contractual relationship?
It can be a contract, but he was within his will.
Isn't every employment relationship contractual, either expressly or impliedly?
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that characterization, Your Honor.
You would not?
I would not. I believe that you can have an employment contract and with express terms.
I added the impliedly. Isn't, if it's not an express contract, isn't an employment relationship an implied contract?
Again, that's not how I would characterize it, Your Honor. And I don't think anybody, everybody who's looked at this kid and argued here has, I mean, nobody's taken that position or cited any authority to that effect, Your Honor. There, certainly the hearing officer and the NADC argued that it was an implied contract.
Thank you.
Thank you. And are there any other questions? Otherwise, we would ask that the court reverse the decision of the district court, which would find the contracts rendered into here and that there was no violation of counts 3 through 11. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Melson, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Lynn Melson, an assistant attorney general, and I'm here this morning on behalf of the Nebraska Accountability and Disclosure Commission. Mr. Moore was found by the commission and the district court to have violated section 49-14, 103.01. Conflict interest statutes that are found in the Political Accountability and Disclosure Act. That statute at subsection 2 sets out the general rule that any contract between author and his governing body is prohibited. And at one time prior to the enactment of the current act, Nebraska law prohibited all contracts between author and his body, and that conflict of interest rendered the contract void. But today, there's an exception to that general rule, and that appears at subsection 5 of the statute. The officer may conditionally have that contract with the governing body, but only if the officer makes sufficient public disclosure and abstains from voting on his own contract. Subsection 5 specifically requires that the officer include the contract or attend at a board meeting, make a declaration on the record that he has an interest in the matter, and that he abstained from voting on the approval of the contract or claim. This time with the purpose of the act and with the conflict of interest statutes. When we look at the act, section 49-14 states that officials should be independent and impartial. And this goal is impaired when there is a conflict of interest or a potential conflict of interest. The private interests of the public officer and his or her duties as that officer. So that exception in subsection 5 allows the contract, but it still ensures the public has sufficient information regarding the potential conflict of interest or any additional payment given to that public officer. Here, I believe the appellant concedes that he did not follow the provisions of subsection 5. I believe that's conceded in his brief, and I think the facts are undisputed that he did not follow those three statutory steps. He performed work that varied from month to month for the village of Madrid. He submitted claims or vouchers each month in the years in question. He reported this hourly work, he requested and received payment for that work, and he failed to follow those three steps. And so for those reasons, the commission found that he violated the statute and assessed a civil penalty of $500.
Is the evidence of, do you agree there is no written contract?
That would be correct, Your Honor.
And is the evidence of an implied contract what happened at the village board meeting? So the submission of the claim and the payment of the claim, or is there other evidence of an implied contract?
Well, I think when we look at the contractual arrangement here,
he performed these tasks the very month to month. So his performance of the work and then submitting the claim or voucher for payment each month and receiving payment for that hourly work each month, I think that there was an acceptance and consideration here. So maybe on apply contract.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. What does the record show about the mechanism by which he was paid or the vouchers were paid? Was this like in a back office? Was this in public? Was it announced? Were the vouchers anywhere on the agenda?
Your Honor, when we look at Exhibit 13 in this matter, those were the of the village meetings, including the agenda. There was an item that stated consider bills and complaints. I don't think that would be adequate to inform public that this particular voucher or arrangement would be considered. When we look at Exhibit 14, that consists of all of the monthly claims or vouchers that the appellant submitted. Those are dated and they are signed by each of the village board members, including Mr. Moore.
Are those just with all the other vouchers that the board may have considered?
I believe so, Your Honor. I'm not sure that's totally clear in the record, but I believe that's the case. And along with those vouchers, as you can see in Exhibit 14, the appellant would generally submit a list of the work that he had performed. So it might say 2 hours work on the but or 2 hours, you know, mowing. It also would include mileage if that happened to pertain. And then Exhibit 15 is the minutes of the meetings. And in those board minutes, generally there is just a list of various claims or vouchers that had been submitted to the board with the name of the recipient, the amount to be approved for that recipient, and the claims were then allowed, voted on and allowed.
And those minutes show that all of the board members voted for those claims and there was no recusal from.
The minutes do not reflect that there is any abstention from voting. I believe Gillett concedes in his brief that he did not abstain from voting.
With the exception of one, correct?
I think there was one situation toward the end of 2016 in which perhaps he abstained from voting. But these monthly claims for the hourly work that he performed, I think he concedes that he did not abstain from voting on those claims.
Do the minutes that are in evidence reflect that anyone else besides the village board members attended any of these meetings?
I don't know that the minutes are that detailed to show who attended.
Well, that's not surprising.
It just reflects the members that were present for the meeting.
Okay.
Someone complained to the commission, is that correct?
That's correct.
Do we know who it was, or is that in the record?
It is in the record, Your Honor. I just don't recall the name at this time.
Is the relationship of the complainant in the record? In other words, I don't really care who what the name was, but what did that person have to do with the village?
I believe they were just residents of the village.
All right.
So I think Justice Stacy had a question about who made the offer for the appellant to do this work. Was there any formal offers ever made?
I don't think there is anything in the record to show a formal offer. I mean, I think you could look at the situation as the board wanted or expected him to perform certain hourly work each month. Perhaps that's the offer. He accepted it. He went out and performed the work. He testified that there was an agreed upon hourly rate for this work. And he performed the work, he his voucher for his claim for payment, and he received consideration. He received the payment.
Do we know from the record whether other board members did similar type of work and got paid for it, or?
I don't believe there's anything in the record that pertains to that. As to whether he was an employee or an independent contractor, I think this is somewhat of a red herring. I think in either situation, he would have a contractual arrangement with the board for performing this hourly work. And the statute itself certainly makes no distinction between contracts with employees versus independent contractors. It just says any contract. There are some cases we've cited in our brief. They are older cases that were decided under a different statute, because at that time, all contracts were prohibited and there was no exception. But those cases do show that this court characterized agreements between an officer and his governing body as a contract in a situation in which a chairman of a board also was hired as an employee.
Is the position that there is or is not such a thing as a non-contractual arrangement of this kind? So you understand? What I'm trying to get at is, your opponent seems to argue that it is not a contract. Does the commission agree that that's possible?
I am not aware of a situation such as this that would not be considered a contract. And I think the commission has long taken the position, for example, it's not just an employment situation. It would also cover the situation, for example, of a city council member that owns the local lumber store, for example, and the lumber store sells lumber to the city for a city project. That's a contract. You know, there may not be a formal written contract ahead of time, but it's certainly the type of contract that needs to be disclosed to the public. Conflict of interest.
In this case, there was an agreement that he would do work and that he'd be paid an hourly wage.
Correct, Your Honor.
Nobody disputes that.
That's correct.
So whether that's
if I may, following up on Justice Castle's question, is there any other form of relationship by which appellant could be paid other than the contract, employee, independent contractor, quantum merit, volunteer, anything else we haven't imagined?
Your Honor, I can't think of another situation. I see my time is up. For all of the reasons we have discussed this morning, I would ask that this court affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? Thank you, counsel. There is no time for rebuttal, so you are both excused.